This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Writer Ted Conover spent a year as a guard at Sing Sing, a maximum security prison north of New York City by the Hudson River. His goal was to observe the prison system from the inside and write a book about it. Conover is best known for his book Coyotes, about the world of illegal Mexican immigrants. Sing Sing's initial structure was built in 1826. The prison now covers 55 acres, most of it rocky hillside. Conover describes the A block, which was completed in 1929, as probably the largest freestanding cell block in the world, just 12 feet shy of two football fields. That one block houses about 684 inmates, more than the entire population of many prisons. Conover's new book is called New Jack, Guarding Sing Sing. I asked him if he began the job with ideals of the kind of guard he wanted to be.
I wanted to do the job well. I wanted to be a good guard. I didn't really know what that meant when I first got called to the Corrections Academy, but it soon becomes clear that at least in one way, a guard is someone who follows the rules. But in a more profound way, once you're working the job, you see that a good guard is something between a tyrant and a pushover. You have to walk this narrow line every day and strike some kind of balance just between being too easy and being a total jerk. And the longer you're there, in a way, the more you get your sea legs and learn how to handle yourself. But also the longer you're there, the more it sort of grates on you and I think hardens you, and you may just become more of a jerk automatically.
What were considered the best and worst assignments for guards when you were working there?
The main thing most COs, correction officers, want is not to have to spend time around inmates, because it's inmates that make the job so incredibly difficult and stressful. Inmates want to test guards all the time. They want to defy you. There's a balance of power in prison that's sort of reset every day. And if they don't know you, if you're a new jack or a rookie, they want to see what you're made of. And so the new guards get stuck in the buildings where inmates live and handed big rings of keys that weigh down your pants, and you let inmates in and out of their cells all day long and help them when they need something. After you've been there 10 years, you can instead sit in a wall tower, one of the guard posts around the perimeter, and enjoy peace and quiet, or you can sit at a little used gate all day long, and the job can be very tranquil and nice, but when you start out, it's pretty much like war.
What are the most potentially dangerous moments during the course of your day when you're guarding the cells and letting prisoners in and out of their cells?
The inmates are locked in their cells all night long, so the night shift is a great shift. I worked the day shift, and every morning when I arrived on the floor of the housing block with my keys, it would be quiet with all the inmates locked in their cells, but my first job of the day was to let them out to go to breakfast, and in many ways it felt like opening Pandora's box. It's not a bad job while the inmates are in their cells, but even maximum security inmates are let out of their cells several times a day en masse. If they were escorted individually to meals, to the classroom, to the gym, and the yard, it would require a staff of hundreds of guards, and prisons are so expensive already that inmates are often let out many at a time. And they're let out into a small space at Sing Sing. Old cell blocks have sort of very narrow walkways outside the cells, and as the guard, you're standing right next to them. And these are often very large and muscular young men, and there are many of them, and often only one of you. And I carried a radio when I worked on that gallery that had an alarm pin on it that would get me help if something terrible happened. But help can take a while to arrive. And so it's when you are surrounded by a mass of inmates who are headed somewhere or should be headed somewhere that bad things can start to happen.
What are some of the things you were taught in training about how to handle, for instance, that moment in the morning when you first open up the cells?
Well, it's interesting. Being a prison guard is essentially to work a people job. You deal with people all day long, and yet the training is sort of like boot camp. They are there to teach you discipline and teach you the rules, and the main message is your job will be to enforce the rules. What you have to learn is that you're dealing with sort of like being on a floor with 100 violent criminals is like being around a sort of unstable bomb or something. If you are too aggressive or one of them who's having a particularly bad day perceives disrespect, he might slug you. Or you might happen to walk between two guys who've been waiting for a chance to stab each other for the last 2 weeks, and they're going to start. It's you never know day to day what might happen. But violence occurs every day. Every day at Sing Sing, an inmate gets stabbed. On average, at lineup in the morning, we would hear about this every single day. Less often, guards get stabbed or punched or spit on or the other things that happen. But that happens frequently, too.
So were you ever the guard on duty while somebody was getting stabbed and it kind of fell to you to break it up?
That never happened with a shank, with a knife. But there were a couple of times when inmates got into fights and I was one of the officers who pulled them apart and got them handcuffed, that sort of thing.
Now, when you started at Sing Sing, a lot of inmates said to you, you're going to learn that some things that they taught you in training can get you killed, and you weren't sure if this was meant to be good advice or a threat. What were some of the things that the inmates warned you not to do?
What they are generally referring to is zealous enforcement of the rules. Prison is basically a totalitarian culture that's organized with rules. There are hundreds of rules, only some of them printed in the rule book. For example, inmates get a sort of recreation on the ground floor of the cell block buildings a few times a week. This is like an area with metal picnic tables bolted to the cement floor that's adjacent to maybe 80-some cells. And the cells are supposed to stay locked. But lots of inmates over time have gotten to know guards who let them leave their cells open so they can go in and out of their cells. They can trade magazines or books with other inmates. And if you come in fresh from the academy, you're told all those doors stay locked. So what, you know, when an inmate says that, some of the things they taught you in the academy could get you killed. He's basically saying, don't enforce that rule. It's going to make me and a lot of other people mad. And some of these people, when they get mad, bad things happen. So it's a kind of threat, and inmates are forbidden to make threats, and yet it's an oblique kind of threat. And if you write an inmate a ticket or try to knock him down if he says it, you're going to look very silly. So there's lots of gray area in prison where the power politics are pushed back and forth.
How did you decide which rules to enforce and which rules to just, you know, overlook?
Every officer decides on his or her own priorities. For me, it was less important to see that they made their beds before leaving their cells or, you know, straightened everything up before going to chow than it was, say, that they didn't play their radios loudly. There's a rule that if you suspect an inmate of using any, you know, marijuana, you smell marijuana in a cell block all day long, but you can't find the inmate who's smoking it usually. You know, they'll take a couple tokes and away it goes, and you have no idea. There were more than 500 inmates in the building where I mainly worked. And so you have to do what's practical. And then I wanted to not be hypocritical to the degree that it was possible. And since I've smoked marijuana recreationally, I thought that would be pretty hypocritical to try and turn in all these guys for smoking marijuana. So that was a rule I tended not to worry about. But if I ever saw an inmate, a big one, hitting up on a smaller inmate, trying to get something from him, or threatening another officer, another inmate, I'd try to enforce those rules.
Well, it becomes so arbitrary because you say you wouldn't try to enforce the marijuana rule because you smoked it. Well, you also eat whenever you want to and sleep whenever you want to, and no one tells you to tidy up your room. And I mean, you're a free man, you know.
Exactly.
And there are no privileges allowed to most people in prison. Forget marijuana, you know.
Right. Oh no. What you bring up a point that is very central to the whole experience of working in a prison, which is the way inmates are infantilized. They have shown themselves to be incapable of living outside prison in most cases. And so here they are in a world where they get to make very few decisions for themselves. You make all these decisions, and you come home at the end of the day, and I'll never forget the night I walked home into my house and saw my 2-year-old daughter screaming at me behind the bars of her crib, and I just thought, these two jobs are just alike, being a parent and working in a prison. It's just that the guys at prison can do you some real damage.
How would you decide which prisoner to make an example of? Because there are so many ways that could backfire. For example, you're white. I would imagine if you decided to make an example of someone who had violated a rule that other people had violated too, and that prisoner was African American, they can accuse you of picking on them because you're racist.
That is absolutely true, and it happens all the time. About half the inmates at Sing Sing are African American, and another 40% are Latino. And they are watching you all day long. Both sides are trying to see if you are being nicer to the Latinos or to the African Americans. And if you have written your last 2 or 3 tickets by coincidence to an African American, you're going to hear about it, that you're a racist. You're going to be at your Klan meeting tonight. Hope you enjoy it. You're soft on the Latin, you're a Latino lover. You're just constantly monitored like that. So it's a sort of lose-lose situation. You just try to do what seems right. If you're having a problem with inmates not locking into their cells promptly when you tell them to, you go for the guy who's the worst offender. And, you lock him in, you take away his afternoon recreation, and he's going to scream and shout, but people will notice, and you hope to get more compliance that way, and you hope people don't think you're singling them out because of their color. But, no, there's so much racial sensitivity in prison, so many African-American prisoners, for example, seem to feel they're prisoners of war. There's very little feeling among many inmates that I am here doing my time because I did something wrong and I'm paying my debt to society, you know. There was a sort of rationale for prison almost 200 years ago when Sing Sing was built that seemed to be more of a contract between a prisoner, a criminal, and society. And that's really sort of almost gone completely out the window.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Ted Conover. He's a writer who spent a year as a corrections officer in Sing Sing in a hope to better understand what's happening inside America's prisons. Let's take a short break here and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Ted Conover. He's a writer who spent a year as a guard at Sing Sing Maximum Security Prison in New York. And this was his attempt to better understand what's happening inside America's prisons. What are some of the ways you watched yourself change while you were a prison guard?
I feel like I'm still in recovery. I'm still trying to assess all the things that working in prison that long did to me. I think it makes you harder, tougher, more cynical, more skeptical of people. It makes you less willing to give somebody the benefit of the doubt. At the same time, you become conscious of, you know, not being too sensitive to things. You know, if you feel a slight, you know, you're in a conversation with somebody, just let it go. That's really the best prescription for staying healthy. It made me wish I had the time to work out in a gym every day. Being a new parent, I didn't. I think my job would have been easier if I was more bulked up. It made me sad because despite the title of corrections officer, there's not much correction or rehab involved in the job. I think 50 years ago, well, the guards were still called guards then, but there was still a glimmer of optimism in the idea that prisons could turn certain people around, that they could rehab people. I mean, even back at the turn of the 19th century, when America built the first penitentiaries in the world, there was this idea behind it that penitent reflection, the Quakers' idea, could turn an inmate around, that this hope that a person might come out of prison better than how they went in. And when you work as a guard these days, there are times you wish there were some part of the job that just let you think you were doing something that was going to help this person. And instead, the job is stupider than that and narrower than that, and you get good at saying no, and that's basically where it ends.
Well, you know, I'm thinking, if the job changed you in the ways that it sounded like it changed you, imagine what it does to the prisoners.
Oh, yeah. I mean, or other guards for whom it really is a career. I mean, in theory, I could have left any time. But, to have that be your career, or much more profoundly, as you say, to be an inmate, obliged to be there for many years, it's a wonder that some come out with their humanity intact. And I did meet inmates who I really felt delighted to find, you know, here's somebody who's kept a glimmer of their soul alive. I met this one amazing inmate because I noticed one day in the summer when he had his shirt off, there was a long poem tattooed across his entire back. And on the front, he had in very large letters the word assassin. But on the back is this long poem. And it took a long time before he would tell me what it was. And he finally said, oh, it's, you know, I copied it out of a book I read at Rikers Island. You've never heard of it. It's a book by a Jewish girl. She wrote a diary in World War II. And I said, oh, Anne Frank. And he looked at me like I was from another planet, you know, a CO who's read a book. And it took me a long time because it's not really a poem. It's just the last two lines of the diary of a young girl. But it's very poignant. It's words to the effect that when everything around you is bad, you end up turning your heart inside out, the bad part on the outside. I think I've got this. The bad part on the outside and the good part on the inside, and keep trying to find a way to become what I'd like to be and what I could be if only there were no other people in the world. And so here's a guy, 26 years old, I think, a robber from Puerto Rico, who has found common experience with a Jewish refugee in World War II. And that was a cool thing. That was just the sort of thing I would never know of if I hadn't done this. And that was the sort of thing that made it worthwhile.
Did you spend a lot of time thinking about what these men were going to be like when they're released from the prison culture that they'd been in?
All the time, because I live in New York City, and I've actually seen, since I quit, I've seen two inmates on subways, inmates who I supervised as a guard at Sing Sing. And they haven't recognized me. My hair's longer now. I had a buzz cut back then. But no, you think about it all the time. And in fact, one inmate I got to know spent all his spare time planning the robbery he was going to commit as soon as he got out. And he was open about it. And he said, that's all I know how to do, and I'm going to get it right next time. I'm not going to make a mistake and get caught. Another inmate, I was on the floor when his parole officer came by. This is an inmate with mental problems who had nearly connected with a punch with me, and he was getting paroled in a week. And I just thought, I said, well, what happens the day he forgets his medication on the subway? What's going to happen? And she said, not my problem. They all come back. So it says a lot.
So you were hoping that the prison would help teach some skills to help people live outside once they got out?
Yeah, or just give them some idea that there's another way you might make a living and create a life that you would like that doesn't involve victimizing people. But that's a very large and it's an almost spiritual lesson. And it takes a very big and sort of coherent effort to try to shape somebody's life like that. And prisons today are not up to the task.
Well, Ted Conover, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Ted Conover is the author of New Jack, Guarding Sing Sing. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.